The following views and opinions do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its staff, management, Franklin Communications, or parent company. To hear a replay of this show or one of the other great shows that previously aired, log on to dentallyspeaking.com or iTunes, keywords Dr. Kvitko or Dentally Speaking. Listeners should not use Dr. Kvitko's comments and advice in place of an actual dental exam.
Brighten your life with a smile that shows the professional touch of Dr. Kvitko.
Time now for Dentally Speaking with Dr. Brian Kvitko. Call 459-9769. That's 459-WSNY to discuss your dental issues. Now, here's your host, Dr. Kvitko.
Hello, and welcome to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko, brought to you by Alum Creek RV and Marine. Our show is also known as Everything You've Always Wanted to Know About Dentistry, but We're Too Numb to Ask. Hello, I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko, and thank you for joining me here today on Sunny 95. I really appreciate it. If you can't hear me, it probably means you need more batteries in your transistor radio. I hope that a lot of people are up and have enough power to be able to hear us today. It's been a crazy couple days, hasn't it, when that storm came through on Friday. And today, we have with us on the phone, we're going to bring him on in just a second, we have a gentleman that he lives in Columbus, came back in town in time to be on the show, but had no power, and so he drove to Cincinnati to find a hotel room. So he'll be on the phone with us instead of in the studio. Before I bring my guest on, let me just mention that registration is open for the Dr. Kvitko Golf Classic, presented by Buffalo Wild Wings. All the money goes to the Down Syndrome Association of Central Ohio. The event takes place July 27th at Bent Tree Golf Course and Royal American Links, both at the same time, 2 p.m. shotgun start. You can register by going to either drkvitko.com, dentallyspeaking.com, or benttreegc.com. All right. It's going to be a lot of fun. We have a lot of Ohio State basketball legends that will be there, and we have basketball equipment that will be on the course so people can actually, your 19th hole, there will be 19 holes of competition, and one of them will be shooting free throws. I think you're going to have 10 free throws, and the number you miss will be your golf score or something like that. And we'll have some of the OSU basketball players there to give you advice on how to keep your score down. All right, now let's get on to today's show. Today's show I'm very, very happy to have with me, and like I said, on the phone, it is Aaron Haslam. And let me just read a little bit about Aaron. In February of 2011, Ohio Attorney General Mike DeWine recruited Aaron to lead his initiative against prescription drug abuse in Ohio. Aaron was the Adams County prosecutor at the time, which was in the heart of the prescription drug epidemic. Aaron had great success in prosecuting criminal cases involving prescription drugs. He also led and participated in many community initiatives to help combat the prescription drug epidemic in Adams County. In his role for the Ohio General's office, Mike DeWine, Aaron is prosecuting criminal cases directly related to prescription drug abuse and diversion in state courts throughout Ohio. As part of a collaborative effort between the Ohio General, Ohio Attorney General, and the U.S. Attorneys Steve Dettelbach and Carter Stewart, Aaron was cross-designated as a special assistant United States attorney in both the northern and southern districts of Ohio to assist the United States in prosecuting criminal cases involving prescription drug abuse and diversion in federal courts throughout Ohio. Recently, Attorney General DeWine has expanded Aaron's focus to include heroin and other synthetic drugs. Aaron graduated from Wright State University in 2001 with a Bachelor of Science in Psychology and then earned his Doctor of Juris degree in 2004 from the Cleveland Marshall College of Law at Cleveland State University. And Aaron, in Aaron's email, it says that he is the co-coordinator, Special Prosecutions Unit, Criminal Justice, Office of Ohio Attorney General Mike DeWine. Aaron, thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you, Dr. Kvitko.
Boy, that's a pleasure. That's quite a resume there.
Well, thank you.
As you could tell, I couldn't even pronounce some of those words. Could be that it's early in the morning and, it's been a crazy weekend.
It's been an interesting few days with the storms.
Yeah, it's amazing how in a second things change. You know, our whole focus, we go from, in my case, you keep reading about AEP and that the First Energy Corporation. They're arguing in the media and who's right and who's wrong, and you go from maybe picking a side to going, boy, I sure am glad we have electrical utilities that are out there fixing this.
It makes us appreciate what we have when we don't have it.
Exactly. We're so used to just flipping the switch on. Okay, so I have several questions. We have an hour show, and I think I wrote more questions than we have time for, but I'm going to do my best to get through these. So first of all, could you explain to me what is a pill mill? Because I used to think it was just the nickname that somebody gave to a regular doctor's office that prescribed a lot of pain medications, but that's not correct, is it?
You're exactly right. That would not be correct. A pill mill, when you think of pill mill, are simply disguised as pain management clinics, and they either rarely or never provide any medical care other than writing of or dispensing of prescription drugs.
So it's like
pill
a storefront.
Most lack professional staff. For example, when you go to a legitimate physician, you're going to have a registered nurse or a licensed practical nurse, physician's assistant, some kind of professional staff. In a pill mill, you're typically not going to have that licensed professional in there working with the physician. They don't alter their prescribing practices. Every person gets the same prescription, typically the cocktail, which I'm sure we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
There's no individualization of the treatment of the patient. In addition, there are rarely referrals. They often do not treat the actual cause, but the symptoms of pain.
So they don't send them for an MRI. They don't send them for physical therapy. They just write prescriptions and say thank you.
Exactly.
Okay.
The business model, what we like to say when we talk about pill mills, the business model hinges on keeping you hooked, keeping you addicted to that opiate, and not being treated for what the underlying cause of your problem is. So if you do have back pain, instead of treating that underlying back pain, they're just going to mask it. They're going to treat the symptom of it, the pain.
Sounds like easy money for the doctor.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of these businesses are cash-only businesses, $200 a patient. Sometimes they have dispensaries within the facility where they will also provide you the drugs, your pain medication, and a lot of times they'll mark those up 10, 20, 30% because the pharmacies around those facilities will not fill prescriptions, so they can mark them up so their patients will pay that price in order to get the prescriptions.
Now, I'm curious, how many, and I read this in the paper and I don't remember, so I'm hoping to lean on you a little bit, how many pills would one of these pill mills prescribe in a month?
It varies. The exact number would be hard to pinpoint because the pill mills range from how many patients they would see a day, but we've seen pain clinics that would see 100 patients a day. We've seen them where they keep it low, where they'll only see 15 or 20 a day. And depending on how bold a particular owner of a clinic is, would depend on how many pills might come through. But what I can tell you is one of the cases recently I've been working on, the clinic ran through in about 10 months' time, ran through almost 4 billion milligrams of oxycodone.
4 billion?
In 11 months' time.
4 billion with a B, milligrams. Now, typically OxyContin is either 5 milligram or 10. So if I divide that 4 billion by 10, I'm down to 400 million?
Correct.
Okay, so that would be potentially 400 million pills?
Potentially, absolutely.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing. Now,
in this particular case, it would actually be a little less than that because I think most of the pills, there were some 5 milligram and some 10 milligram, but the majority of pills were 30s.
Wow. Okay, that's no wonder I didn't know that stat. I had never heard that number before. And this is a case you're currently working on. This isn't even one that's been shut down.
It has been shut down.
Okay.
Now we're just doing the follow-up prosecution of the case.
So would it be fair to say that as many as 300 million pills in one from one center?
Absolutely.
Okay.
In approximately 10 months' time.
So it'd be more. Okay, so we divide that by 10 again, and we're down to 30 million. 30 million pills a month? Wow. Am I right?
I'm not sure. I don't have the math right in front of me.
Okay.
It's a lot of pills.
Okay. Maybe we'll just make the answer a lot. But anyway, That's amazing. I had no idea. No wonder the pharmacies don't want to fill them, because first they know these people. They know the people. A lot of them are drug seekers, or I guess there was like a pipeline that went from Florida where they would send people up just to say my neck hurts, my back hurts, and get pills and then drive back down to Florida and sell them down there, right?
All across Ohio, and not only Ohio, we're seeing it across the country, but Florida at the height of this problem was the epicenter of the problem. Ohio, we had a terrible problem, but Florida was even worse than Ohio. And at one point in time, they had 90 of the 100, or approximately 90 of the 100 top prescribers of oxycodone in the country sitting in Florida. And what would happen is residents of Ohio would travel to Florida, would get their scripts, and these were organized criminal enterprises. They would send people to Florida to pick up pills at pain clinics all over the state of Florida, and then they would bring them back to Ohio, and they would sell them on the streets.
Wow.
What's happened is Florida, Attorney General Pam Bondi in Florida, and working with Attorney General DeWine, have collaborated and really cracked down on that problem. But what we're seeing as Florida cracks down and as Ohio cracks down, and Attorney General Conway in Kentucky has cracked down, and also we've seen great movements in West Virginia and other states hit hard by this. We've watched these enterprises move, these pain clinics, pill mills, move from Florida into Georgia, or originally from Ohio. When we started closing down the illegal clinics in Ohio, they were moving to Kentucky, and then as Kentucky cracked down on them, they started moving to Tennessee. So you got to move them from Florida to Georgia, Ohio, Kentucky to Tennessee, and as those areas crack down, they start to move to other areas. We've heard Baltimore, Maryland, Michigan has also recognized an increase in the number of pills. And oddly enough, we've heard stories, anecdotally, we've heard stories from law enforcement personnel that people are going to Georgia to fill prescription or to get the prescriptions. They can't get them filled there, or they can't get them filled in other parts on the travel back up north. They'll go all the way to Buffalo, New York. So from Georgia to Buffalo, New York to fill a prescription and then bring back into Ohio.
Wow.
To sell or divert.
Wow. So it's that lucrative, which is unfortunate.
There's a lot of money involved in pain medication.
Hey, we have to go to a commercial soon. And let me let listeners know, you guys, we are live. We're in the studio. Aaron is on the phone from Cincinnati because of no power at home in Columbus. But the phone lines are welcome. If you have a question for Aaron or myself, you can call 459-9769. That's 459-WSNY. And I'm going to ask a couple questions, ponder your answers, and then when we come back from the break, I'd like you to answer. So is there a point, though, at least I think there is, where a doctor who has a lot of pain management type patients, they could be called into question and maybe at risk of being deemed a pill mill doctor? So my question would be, is that correct? And you know what, let's just go with that question for now. And when we come back, we'll hear your answer, okay? You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kavitko, and we'll be right back.
Stay tuned to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kavitko.
Mom, has your son or daughter been begging you to learn to play guitar, but you don't know where to go or who to talk to? Well, fret no more. Call Guitar Lessons Columbus today at 427-3187. We'll teach your child how to actually apply and use the fundamentals, learn to play an entire song, make new friends with guitar, and even play with a drummer, all in the first month of playing. The earlier they start, the better. So don't wait. Call Guitar Lessons Columbus today at 614-427-3187 or check us out online at guitarlessonscolumbus.com.
Brighten your life with a smile that shows the professional touch. Dr.
Kavitko. Hi, I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kavitko. Remember the beautiful smile you had before your first set of dentures? Remember the disappointment you had when you looked at them in the mirror for the first time? The teeth were either too big or too small, or they made your lip too fat. Whatever it was, they just didn't fit your face, and you've been stuck with them ever since. And to make things worse, every time you get a new set, your dentist makes them look like the old set. Here at Dr. Kavitko Mentness & Associates, rather than just copying the mistakes of years gone by, we'll use photos of you when you were younger to recreate your original smile, minus any flaws you wish us to leave out, of course. We can help you turn back the clock. Interested? Give us a call at 614-262-9588. That's 614-262-9588.
Dr. Kavitko and Associates.
It's the real thing this spring at Alum Creek RV and Marine. Their spring RV sales event is going on now with deep discounts on new and used trailers, fifth wheels, and motorhomes to make room for new inventory. The 2013s are here and the last of the 2012s must go. Hours have expanded, open until 8 on Tuesday and Thursday nights. Check out their specials on service, on scooters, and their RV rentals. An award winner, 40 years and going strong, Alum Creek RV and Marine. I-71 north of Columbus, call 740-363-4068 or shop at alumcreekrvandmarine.com.
I wanna be on the cover of Forbes magazine, smiling next to Oprah and the Queen. Oh, every time I close my eyes.
Welcome back to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kavitko. I'm here with Aaron Haslam, who is a senior AAG co-coordinator, Special Prosecutions Unit, Criminal Justice Office of Ohio Attorney General Mike DeWine. And Aaron, so before the break, I asked you the question about, at what point does a legitimate doctor risk being called into question, maybe even being deemed a pill mill doctor? From what you were describing as a pill mill, it doesn't sound like that's very likely, but what would your answer be?
It's very unlikely, and we hear that oftentimes as we've pursued this. And if you've heard the Attorney General talk about the issue, Attorney General DeWine has made it clear we don't want to inhibit legitimate people who need pain management treatment. And there are those folks out there. There are legitimate patients out there that need treatment. The difference between the physicians or the prescribers that we're dealing with as opposed to the ones that are doing it legitimately, they're doing all those things in their treatment that we talked about earlier. They're looking at the underlying cause of the problem and just not prescribing pills. They're looking at referring their patient out for physical therapy or for alternative methods of treatment or surgery. They're not treating every patient the same. Every patient that comes through is not getting a prescription of oxycodone, a prescription for Xanax, a prescription for Soma, the cocktail that we like to call that the cocktail that we most often see. They're treating each patient differently. It's an individualized treatment plan.
Okay.
So physicians that are treating a patient legitimately, if they do get called into question, it's going to be dismissed very quickly.
Now, Aaron, on one hand, I'm a prescriber because I do lots of surgical procedures. You know, I remove wisdom teeth, place implants, do gum surgeries, root canals, all of those things. Typically, I think people need pain pills for afterwards. But also, 5 years ago or so, I was playing adult ice hockey and I was injured, and it turned out to be a neck injury that I almost needed neck surgery for. and so I know what it's like to, point to your neck and say it hurts and have people in the room look at you like, you're not bleeding. Your head seems to be on straight. You know, it's like, it's...
I understand.
and so, especially, I read a story in the Dispatch about how apparently some people with legitimate pain are being denied pain pills because of this. So, and I know that the governor came out and said that, and maybe Attorney General Mike DeWine also, they want to limit or tell emergency room physicians how many pain pills, or for how many days, I think it was worded, they can give people and then send them to a doctor. So how do we keep this from actually getting in the way of care?
Well, it's very interesting. It is a balancing act. The emergency room guidelines that you read about in the Dispatch and was highly publicized, that was not something that was put together by government. Government was involved, but it was actually the physician community approaching the state medical board and the state medical association and saying, let's work on this. We understand that we have a lot of people dying because of the increased prescribing of opiates. And so we need guidelines. And in the emergency room setting, it's very interesting that you mentioned that. I heard a physician once say, if you come in because you have chronic pain into the emergency room, we don't have to prescribe a month's supply of opiates to you because it is chronic pain, which means it's not an emergency situation. You're going to be in pain, right? But that pain, we're going to try and reduce it, but the pain's still going to be there. Monday when you can go see your pain management specialist. So in the case of a neck injury, and I am involved in athletics as well. I love to play basketball and golf and different sports, softball. And occasionally I'll have those injuries. And if you do have to go to the emergency room, they can give you a small supply to help ease that pain until you can see your specialist on Monday. But it is a balancing act. But when you look at from 1999 to 2007, Ohio's rate of opioid distribution increased 325%.
Wow.
During that same time period, our unintentional drug overdose death rate increased 305%.
Wow. So they're very similar.
It's almost a direct correlation. As we see an increase in distribution, we see a huge increase in drug overdose deaths. So it is a balancing act, but one of the things that we're trying to do at the Ohio Attorney General's office is protect Ohio's families. And Attorney General DeWine absolutely understands there's legitimate people that need pain management treatment out there, but we also have a lot of people dying from the diversion and misuse of these prescription pain medications.
Okay. Well, that's good to know because, you know, let me tell you, and by the way, I just want to remind people, we have a Dr. Kavicka's question of the day. We do every day, and so I want to remind people the best math we could do on the fly without a calculator is the worst case you've seen so far is a case of a pill mill giving out 30 million pills in a month over a 10-month, about 30 million times 10 for 300 million. That's amazing. Okay, now I want to tell me what you think of my policy for prescribing narcotic painkillers. Here's what it is. If I've done something to a person that causes pain, I'll prescribe them pain pills. If they came in pain and they chose not to be treated, for some reason, it could be I don't have the money, I'm too busy, whatever they say, it doesn't really matter to me. If they ask for a pain prescription, I say no. Okay, so they came in pain, they said they don't want treatment. The answer is no, you don't get pain pills. Keep in mind that even if I know in advance that they're addicted to drugs or they've abused them in the past, that's still my policy. Because if I cause them the pain by extracting a tooth or doing a root canal or something, I'll prescribe them narcotic painkillers. What do you think, what do you think the Attorney General would think of that policy?
Oh, I think the Attorney General and as well as me, I think you're on the right page. What you're noticing is simply what we call a red flag. If a patient comes to you in pain, but refuses treatment, that's a red flag. You're not saying necessarily that they're pill seeking, but there's the potential there, and you don't want to contribute to the problem. As opposed to when you do the procedure, you're the one that you know that person is going to be in pain based on your training and experience. Not to mention the pain that you're causing that individual is what we call acute pain. And I know you're very familiar with acute and chronic pain.
Yes.
So when we think about using opiates, very appropriate to treat them in an acute pain setting. I break my arm. My child breaks his arm, and I should provide a disclaimer. I don't have children, but if I did have children, one of my children were to break his or her arm, go to the hospital, they may need pain medication just the same way. If I'm playing a sport and I break an arm, I'm going to need medication. That's acute pain. That's an acute pain situation, much like most of the procedures that you're doing on your patients create an acute pain situation. Very, very legitimate treatment. Oxycodone 30 milligram, I can think of surgery I had very recently, was prescribed 30 milligram oxycodone pills. I didn't fill the prescription because I wasn't in pain. But if I were, that's a very appropriate prescription.
Right.
On the flip side, chronic pain is where you have to be very careful about using opioids to treat the pain because opioids or opiates have a very addictive quality. We know that from history. History tells us that. We've seen countries and populations addicted to those in the past. So that's where the key, if I may, one of the things that we're really seeing in the medical community with a combined effort between state government, Ohio Attorney General Mike DeWine's office, Governor John Kasich's office, state medical boards, state medical associations, there's really an increased push for education so providers out there who are not pain management specialists, just your general practitioners and those prescribers would have a better understanding in situations where you want to prescribe opiates and when you don't want to prescribe opiates, and to better understand the qualities and, just as you mentioned, the red flags. When is a patient drug-seeking as opposed to seeking legitimate treatment?
Right. I mean, I take an x-ray and you can see this rotten tooth, it's abscessed, but I get the feeling that, I'm pretty sure the ones that say I don't want treatment, and they always have good excuses, and they can be so convincing, you know, oh no, my dog's sick, I got to go pick up my daughter, whatever it is. But I'm thinking they want to use this one rotten tooth to get drugs for the next, you know, 4 or 5 months till it's just completely decayed and there's nothing left that they can point to. Now, I do want to tell you a story, though, because I have a patient, and he came in, and we did a root canal, and he happens to be on pain medicine for another ailment, and I didn't know that at the time, but that's okay, because I gave him the same thing I would give anybody that had a root canal for the reasons I gave you, and he didn't even fill the pain pill prescription like you said. He didn't feel like he needed it, but about a week later, 10 days later, he went in to fill it because I think he'd been burning through the ones he was given for the other ailment was, and I got a call from the pharmacist wanting to know if I knew that he had been given pills for another reason. I know that I have access to that, and I want you to talk a little bit about it for me. The ORS system, which is the Ohio Automatic Prescription Reporting System. You're familiar with that, right?
Absolutely.
And I did not run an ORS report on him because he's a long-term patient, and I knew what I had done for him needed pain pills. But it did kind of feel like I was being called into question, and so was the patient. And I'm thinking about this one in particular. He waited a whole week before he filled them. If he were a drug seeker, wouldn't he have gone to the pharmacy right away?
In most cases, the individual would go to the pharmacy right away for two reasons. One, he or she's probably already ran through whatever supply he or she had in their possession. Number two, a lot of times to continue to support the addiction, those have to go on the street and be sold so they can recoup some of the money to go get their next high, he or she to get the next high if they're drug addicts.
So, I mean, do you see where practitioners like myself are starting to get a little bit nervous that we're being questioned and people are looking over our shoulder? That's my biggest concern is that we keep it separate. You described what a pill mill is, and we described what a regular practice is, and they're totally different, but there seems to be some graying of the lines, maybe by the pharmacists or something.
I believe that you're correct. There is a gray area, and when I talk all across the state to law enforcement and to medical professionals, and one of the things we talk about is they're absolutely, the gray area is probably larger than the extremes. When we I'll break it down into three categories. We have that low end category, and these aren't hard statistics, but probably less than 1% of the prescribing community would fall into the low area, and that's going to be the pill mill area. They're just bad prescribers who are using their license, whether it be a medical license, a dental license, whatever that license is, that gives them the ability to prescribe to traffic drugs. They're just bad individuals. It's about the money. It's about the greed. It's about those factors. That's going to make up roughly 1%, maybe give or take a little more or less. Then if you go to the other extreme, you have the folks that are in pain management treatment. They get it. They understand it. They go through the regimen. They do physical therapy or referrals. They try all alternatives before they start long-term use of opiates for pain. But they're very careful about it, and they monitor after they do it.
Okay.
The scarier area is exactly the area you're talking about. There is a gray area, and that top area probably is 1 to 3 or 4%. But then you get into that 92 to 95% roughly of folks in the prescribing community who have the ability to prescribe these very lethal, very dangerous drugs if not monitored correctly, who have not been educated completely on what the long-term effects of using those drugs are. Their okay. education in discussions with the medical community, the education over the last 20 years since we've seen a heightened increase in prescribing of opiates, has the education's not followed the ability to prescribe, if that makes sense. So what is going on right now, again, through the efforts of all participants, all the way from government, from Ohio Attorney General Mike DeWine's office, to Governor Kasich's office, to the medical community, the medical schools, the Ohio Department of Health, medical associations, nursing associations, all those entities have really stepped up and said, we need to better educate our members on how to prescribe these opiates in settings and make sure they understand those. But absolutely, one of the fears is we don't want to inhibit the practice of medicine, exactly as you're saying. And we don't want Dr. Kavicko to be nervous when he goes to prescribe an opiate for a legitimate patient. We don't want you to have to feel like I'm being watched over by Big Brother. So absolutely, we want to balance that, and that's what we're working on.
Okay, that sounds good. Now, in a minute, we're going to do Dr. Kavicko's question of the day, so we're not going to do it. Don't call yet, but let me just tell you that the winner is going to receive free flowers from Weistember Florist. They'll be delivered to your place of business this Tuesday afternoon. Another caller will receive a free propane tank refill from Alum Creek RV and Marine. Plus, all of the callers will be entered to win an Alum Creek RV and Marine prize pack, which includes either a one-week stay at Autumn Lake Campground and Day Spa or a four-day rental of a motorhome from Alum Creek RV and Marine. So before we do that, Aaron's an attorney, so he understands this. The attorneys want you to listen to this.
Sunny 95 will not be held liable for any contesting during Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kavicko. Participation in the contest allows Dr. Kavicko to record and broadcast your name and call. One winner per household, prizes are non-transferable, cannot be substituted, and are subject to taxes and fees. Sunny 95 cannot be responsible for the inability to enter the contest, whether due to equipment malfunction or telephone difficulties. All decisions of Dr. Kavicko concerning this contest or eligibility are final.
And now it's time for Dr. Kavitko's question of the day.
And the question is, in Aaron Haslam's experience in prosecuting pill mills, what was one of the worst pill mills to dispense, or rather, how many did they dispense per month? How many pills did this worst pill mill dispense per month? Was it 1,000, 2,000, 5,000, or 30 million? That's A, B, C, or D. How many pills did one of the worst pill mills dispense per month? Was it A, 1,000, B, 2,000, C, 5,000, or D, 30 million. And again, the winner receives free flowers from Weistember Florist. Call 459-9769. That's 459-WSNY. And go ahead and call now.
Stay tuned for more of Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kavicko after these messages.
Looking for that perfect gift? Something different that your friends will love? Moxie's in Clintonville has just what you're looking for. Moxie specializes in entertainment, barware, dishware, and linens, both new and vintage. They carry Fiesta, Hearthstone, and Signature products. Moxie's also has the ideal host or hostess gifts. Wrap candies including wax lips, bubblegum cigars, ring pops, and charm bracelets and necklaces. If you have no room to entertain, no problem. Moxie's has the room for you to host. The soiree room features black and white striped floors, Hollywood style seating, and a private outdoor deck. It's great for your next book or card gathering, birthday, or bridal shower. So when you're looking for a place to host some friends or looking for that perfect gift, go to Moxie's in Clintonville. Moxie's, 3339 North High Street, open Tuesday through Saturday. For more information and hours, call 657-6854. 657-6854.
Brighten your life with a smile that shows the professional touch of Dr. Kavicko.
Hi, I'm general dentist Dr. Brian Kavicko. Are you an adult with teeth that are crooked? Maybe you had braces as a kid, but you didn't wear your retainer as often as you should have? Or maybe your parents weren't able to offer you braces as a child. Well, take heart. Now you can have straight teeth in 6 months. That's right, using clear brackets and tooth-colored wires, we can straighten your teeth before it's even time for your next cleaning. So, if you have a high school reunion, a graduation party, or even a wedding in your future, why not let us straighten, then whiten your teeth? Interested? Call us to schedule a no-charge 6-month smiles consultation at 614-262-9588. That's 614-262-9588.
Dr. Kavitko and Associates.
Welcome back to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kavitko. Today our show is about the pill mills, the legislation. We have Aaron Haslam from Mike DeWine Attorney General's office. He has prosecuted most of these cases and is working really hard. And our Dr. Kavitko question of the day was, in Aaron's worst case scenario that he came across, how many pills did this pill mill give out in a month? And we have a couple callers. We have Marie and Alice. Both of you stay on the line, please, because one of you is going to win the free propane tank refill. The other one will win the free flowers. And both of you will be registered for the Alum Creek RV and Marine prize pack. So let's go to Marie. Marie, how are you?
Good, good.
And you're from Upper Arlington, right?
I am.
Cool. So what is your answer?
30 million.
30 million. Can you believe that?
No. Well, actually, I can.
If I'd have found that online, I would have thought it was fake.
But, I was amazed at that statistic, though. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, it is, because it makes it tough for others. And, of course, all the families that were ruined because of that. So, Maria, if you'll stay on the line, my producer will get your information, and we'll get you the flowers and get you registered for the Alum Creek prize pack, okay?
Thank you.
Okay. And then, Alice, did you have the right answer?
Yes.
You did? 30 million also?
Yes, I said D. Yes, I did. Good morning.
Okay, how are you? Well, Alice, hey, thank you for calling. And I don't know if you can use it or not. If you have a barbecue grill, we'll get you a free propane tank refill, okay?
All righty then.
And you stay on the line as well, and my producer will get with you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so Aaron, I'm still amazed at that number.
I want to give a quick disclaimer on that number, the math, I would have to go back and look at it. I'm trusting the math.
My math in my head.
We did very quickly earlier this morning. But I can tell you that the number's astonishing.
Staggering.
It's absolutely astonishing that somebody could put that many pills out on the street and honestly believe they were engaging in the legitimate practice of pain management.
Oh, I know. And if you do work the math on Monday or Tuesday and you want to send me an email, I'll make sure I get it up on the website or mention it next week if I did my math wrong, okay?
Absolutely.
But clearly the answer was D because we had such low numbers for A, B, and C.
Absolutely. The number was definitely more than A, B, and C combined.
Exactly. Now, okay, I want to tell you that, you know, it's hard for us practitioners to cut somebody off once we have discovered that we have an issue. And on one hand, this legislation has made it helpful because I can blame government. I can blame you guys and say, you know what, John, I'd love to give you these pills, but I can't because there are people looking over my shoulder. So I want to...
That's exactly why we got the emergency room guidelines. Because the physicians in the emergency room said we want something where we can blame government. so that's a lot of the reason why we have those guidelines at the request of physicians. But it was the physicians, it was the prescribers' input in the emergency rooms that ultimately came up with what was appropriate, not government. But that's a lot of the reason we have it. They wanted something to point to.
Okay, and it's true though, because I do get calls from pharmacies, and I get mail letters from insurance companies and all that. But I'll tell you, these people, they're so convincing, and they've been coming in some cases, though. I had one girl, she came in, I do smile makeovers, so a lot of the work that I'm doing is optional. Now, that doesn't mean it doesn't hurt when I get done, or that they might not need a pain pill if I've done cosmetic gum contouring. I've, done a root canal, maybe electively, so that I can make a tooth look straight that was crooked, all kinds of things like that. And so, but when I do it, I want to do it. Let's come in. Let's do a 10-hour appointment. If we have to do that twice, we'll do it twice. I do IV sedation. I can orally sedate you. And then we're done. And then whatever pain control they need for the next week and a half or two, I'm fine with that. But this one patient, what she decided to do, and she told me it was for financial reasons, was one tooth at a time. And with every tooth, she wanted pain pills for a week or two. And I finally said to her, I said, you know, we can't do it. We can't do this. And we got into this little discussion where she said, you promised me you would take care of my pain. And I said, well, I am, but I don't want to do it one tooth at a time. But here's what happens. In every instance where I had to cut off a patient that I, you know, came to believe was just there for the drugs, they get angry, they leave the practice, they usually don't pay their bill, and then they go online and they write all kinds of bad falsehoods about me. They go to these review sites, they never mention that they were upset because I cut them off for drugs. They fabricate a story about the quality of my care. And is there something that can be done about that? I know the problem we face is there's free speech, but you're not supposed to lie either. And have you heard this before, and what can be done about it?
Absolutely. Where we've heard it, the majority of where we've heard those types of stories has been out of the emergency room, not to go back to the emergency room, but there's a rating sheet, and I may mess this up, but I know it as the Press-Ganey rating sheet that comes out of almost every emergency room in the country. And that basically will determine... It's a similar type rating sheet as to what your same folks will say about your practice for the emergency room. Quality of care, how was your visit? It's a survey for each patient that comes through.
Right.
And what emergency room docs have said for years now is if I don't pass out the pain medication, if I don't prescribe it out of the emergency room, I'm going to get dinged on the survey. And unfortunately, and I'm quoting the emergency room physicians, unfortunately, those are the only folks that are filling out the surveys. So then I end up with negative ratings, which will directly affect my future with that hospital, with that emergency room, or ultimately my compensation package when we go to renegotiate or with the organization that they've contracted with to handle the emergency room care. So we've heard that for a while now. What I can tell you is... it's getting better in situations like that. People are starting to understand that those folks that are writing those negative reviews typically are drug seekers that are just looking for their next high and not legitimate patients. As we bring more education and awareness around this issue, people understand that. And those legitimate patients that you are treating also understand it, and they're starting to say, absolutely not. That is not true about Dr. Kavicko. He's an excellent dentist that provides great care. That was just a patient that was unhappy because they were trying to tell the dentist, Dr. Kavicko, how to treat the patient instead of the dentist telling the patient what they need, what needs to be done for their treatment.
You know, it's amazing. I don't know if this is going to be controversial or appropriate or what, but we have this sexual predator list. We have this list of people that we know we should be kind of cautious of. And it seems like there almost ought to be a list of these drug seekers so that everybody can be forewarned. But we also have the HIPAA, the privacy laws for a person's medical care. So I don't know how to reconcile that. But it seems like until we actually have a list of the people that are seeking drugs and are writing these negative reviews, it's still going to be damaging.
Yeah, it's a tough situation. And like everything else we deal with, it's a balancing act. But one of the things that you mentioned earlier, and this is probably a great opportunity to speak about the system, is the ORS system, and that is something available to prescribers. And ORS is just simply Ohio's automated RX reporting system, and it's available to every prescriber in the state of Ohio. And it's something as a prescriber you can go and look at and see what other physicians your patient is seeing and what other prescriptions are being filled by that physician. To help cut down on those doctor shoppers or prescriber those drug seekers, it's underutilized in Ohio. One of the great things, it's ran by the Ohio State Board of Pharmacy. Dana Droz over there does a wonderful job with it. It's the best prescription monitoring program in the country. It's the model program. Not to say it doesn't have some bugs, as we've heard physicians talk about. And they're always trying to work those bugs out, such as the ability to get on it quicker it sometimes is not user-friendly, but they're working those bugs out and making it much more user-friendly.
Yeah, that's good to hear, because I was going to say I'd love to run more reports, but I actually don't have the time, because in some cases you have to wait for them to get, like, send you an email back with the information.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that they've done in the most recent legislation, House Bill 93, which was most recent legislation on this issue, it was called the Pill Mill Bill. And it did a number of things, but one of the things that it did allow were folks that were using the OAR system to delegate within their office someone that can access that system for the prescriber, because as we know, you guys are busy. You have patients. You want to treat as many patients as you can a day for multiple reasons. One, you are a business, and two, patients. You want to see your patients. You don't want to put them off for procedures they need. So that was recognized by the pharmacy board and by the legislators, and they put that in to help with the ease of it. But it's a wonderful tool. It's underutilized throughout Ohio. One of the things that we're currently working on is getting it networked or linked in to other states with prescription monitoring programs, such as Kentucky and West Virginia and some of the other states that border us. Because if you live in Portsmouth, Ohio, which one of the areas really hit hard by this problem, you want to see those patients that are crossing into Kentucky or driving an hour east over into West Virginia that may be doctor shopping.
Right.
So there are improvements coming. What I can tell you is it's a wonderful system, but as we always know, we want to strive to get better in everything we do, and that's exactly what they're doing over at the Ohio State Board of Pharmacy.
Oh, I love having it. It's been great. I was surprised. The way I learned about it was a pharmacist called the office and said, "Did you know that this person has been getting pills from this doctor, this doctor, this doctor?" They gave me the names, and filling them at this pharmacy, and that pharmacy, and they gave me the names. And I thought, how'd they know that? And then I realized that I had access to that too. So that's been really good and a great, great tool. So that is something I really appreciate. Now, I will say that the pill mill legislation, which requires now that if I give somebody some pills to leave the office with, I say, here's a couple of tablets, take these home with you, I have to report that, and I have to report every week whether it's zero pills or not. And so I do about 51 zero reports a year and one report where I've handed somebody a bottle with a few pills in it.
And that was simply because in the early part of the pill mill problem, especially in southern Ohio, a lot of those clinics had dispensaries attached to them, and there were just large amounts of pills coming out of those dispensaries, and they were not being reported. So this was a way to make sure those pills got reported, so we knew what was out there on the streets.
Hey, you know what? We are up against a break. You can stay with us, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. Hang tight. We have to go to a break, and I've got many more questions for you when we come back.
Hey, this is Olympic snowboarder Louis Vito, and make sure you stay tuned to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko.
Dentally Speaking is his talk show, Dr. Kvitko. Let's go!
Experience, artistry, creativity. There are still professions where these words mean something. Studio B Hair Design still believe that practice does make perfect. Whether it's a precision cut, custom color, or something uniquely your own, Studio B can help you find just the right look, all in a comfortable, relaxing atmosphere right in the heart of Clintonville. Let Studio B Hair Design give you the best professional hair care at the best price. And should you need a quick gift idea, why not give a Studio B gift certificate for a birthday, anniversary, or subtle way of telling that special someone your hair needs help? So when looking for a fresh approach to your hair, do what lots of people do in Central Ohio. Trust experience. Trust the professionals at Studio B Hair Design. Studio B Hair Design, 21 Brighton Road, just off High Street in Clintonville. Call for your appointment now, 614-263-8661. 263-8661.
Brighten your life with a smile that shows the professional touch of Dr. Kvitko.
Hi, I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko. Have you always wanted a smile makeover but didn't know where to go or if you could afford it? Well, take heart. Here at Dr. Kvitko Metnis & Associates, we've been doing successful smile makeovers for decades. Stop in and see our vast library of actual before and after photos, or see a small sampling of them at drkvitko.com. Plus, we've made them affordable. Whether you choose the low monthly payments or having your makeover done in phases to spread your cost over time, I know you'll be happy with your new smile. So what are you waiting for? You know you're worth it. Pick up the phone and call us at 614-262-9588. That's 614-262-9588. It's a call that's guaranteed to put a smile on your face.
Dr. Kavitko and Associates.
Like what you hear? Why not use the Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kavitko show to reach your customers by becoming a sponsor? Learn how by calling 262-9588. That's 262-9588.
Welcome back to Dentally Speaking. We are here with Aaron Haslam of Ohio Attorney General Mike. I don't know why I can't say that, Aaron. Okay, of the Ohio Attorney General Mike DeWine's office. And Aaron is the one that is really kind of in the background leading this legislation, this push, and prosecuting these pill mill doctors. Aaron, I have a question. I don't know if you know this or not, but for 2 years now, I've done an event where we do free dentistry for a day. We've done hundreds and hundreds of patients for free. And what I did is I purchased antibiotics and I purchased some pain medicine because we were doing a lot of extractions. And we made sure that then everybody had the pills that they needed because a lot of these people were kind of poor and they couldn't afford to buy their pills, didn't have bus fare, that sort of thing. Okay, so here's the question. We've done it for 2 years now, and I have some left, but I looked, and they're going to expire in February of 2013, and I don't typically hold the event till June. So what I thought about doing is between now until they're gone, is when I write a prescription for someone, or I think they ought to have 10 or 12 lycoprofens or something, is offering them for sale in my office so that I could then take that money, put it in. I have a thing called the Dr. Kavitko Charitable Fund where we try to collect money to do these charitable things and then be able to purchase drugs that aren't outdated for next year's event. Now, when I do that, or if I do that, all of a sudden I'm going to be reporting that I'm giving out pills. Is that going to cause a problem for me?
I would have to defer and refer you over to the dental board or the pharmacy board and let you talk with them. That's a question I wouldn't be comfortable answering. My guess is as long as everyone's aware of what's going on,
right?
It would not cause you any issues. But you'd want to definitely check with the dentist board and the pharmacy board to make sure that they know what's going on and that there are no issues from their stand.
So when they start seeing these reports that maybe have 50 pills instead of zero like they're used to seeing, then if I let them know in advance, at least check with them, that would be a good idea.
Absolutely. As the DEA always say when they're working on drug take-back days, let us know ahead of time. It's much, much easier for us to work with you ahead of time than after the fact.
Okay. Okay. It just seemed like I didn't want them to go to waste and the money could be used to buy the drugs that will be still, you know, not expired by the time we go to do this again. And we had, just so you know, we had a group of pharmacists there all day dispensing the medications and giving out proper instructions and all of that. So we kept everything on the up and up, and they reported. I actually thought I'd get a call from the pharmacy board the following Monday because they did report, I don't know how many, but they reported, I have a stack of prescriptions. We wrote prescriptions and then they were like in-house, and when we handed out the pills, they were reporting as we went. So we did it the right way, but it does make me nervous like we've talked before.
Well, absolutely. Reach out to those folks and ask and let them know ahead of time, and that way you'll avoid any kind of issues.
Okay. Now, one of the linchpins in the argument about this, or rather to pass the pill mill legislation, was that in Ohio the number of deaths from narcotic pain pill overdoses surpassed the number of deaths from automobile accidents. So tell me about that, and has that now changed?
It is unintentional drug overdoses is still the leading cause of death in the state of Ohio, as will be the case in many other states, not just Ohio. And I'm actually looking at the statistic in front of me now. Approximately out of every 10 unintentional drug overdoses, 4 of those are from prescription drugs.
40%.
40%, which is more than more than heroin and cocaine combined, which is at 36%.
Wow.
So
wow.
Prescription drugs are killing more people than heroin, or I'm sorry, heroin and cocaine combined. So it is quite a problem. It kills more people than automobile accidents. It's now the leading cause of accidental death in Ohio. The other thing to remember is before we hit 12 o'clock midnight tonight, four
yes.
people will have died today because of unintentional drug overdoses.
Wow, that's
we
sad.
Are. And the scary part, and I want to make sure I get the statistic out for the folks in Central Ohio to hear. One of the scary parts about this epidemic that we're dealing with is nationally among persons age 12 or older in the year 2009 to 2010 who use pain relievers non-medically, 55% received their drugs for free from a friend or relative, and another 17% stole drugs from a friend or relative. So it's very important for adults not only to educate their children about the issue, but also to keep track of where these dangerous medications are. A lot of what we hear from teenagers are, well, we tried it because a doctor prescribed it, and it can't be dangerous if a doctor prescribed it. So we have a lot of education to do, a lot of awareness, but also keep track of how many pills, how many painkillers you have, not only painkillers, but other pills, and as well, keep them in a safe place, which, as we know, is not necessarily the medicine cabinet.
Okay, that sounds good to know. That's 72%, by the way, of people get them that way. We have to go to another break, but I want you to ponder this question when you come back. I'd like to hear from you how successful you think the pill mill legislation has been, and what do you see coming down the pike? Is there any more legislation being considered that would restrict even more patient access to pain pills or those sort of things? You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kavitko, and we'll be right back.
Estás escuchando Dentally Speaking con Dr. Kavitko aquí en su sesión favorita, Sunday 95.
Hi, this is Richard Simmons. Do you listen to Dentally Speaking?
With
well, you should. Dr. Kavitko's here, and he's going to help you with all of your problems. Are your teeth yellow? He can fix that. Are you missing a tooth? He could put a new one in. How is that?
That's very good. Thank you, Richard.
Canton City Chinese Restaurant is an established, family-owned and operated Chinese restaurant. You can come and sit down and enjoy the relaxed atmosphere of the Canton City. Or if you're on the go or need lunch for your office or dinner for home, call us at 614-261-0262 to order takeout. We have a variety of Cantonese, Hunan, and Sichuan cuisine. You will love the price and be astonished how generous the portions are. Come visit us in our fantastic location at 4330 North High Street, located just south of Henderson in Clintonville. We are open 7 days a week. If you cannot pick from our extensive menu, we would suggest you start with our General Tso chicken. It is the best in the city. When you are craving Chinese food and have tried all the rest, come and order from the best, Canton City Chinese Restaurant in Clintonville. Call us at 614-261-0262 or stop by and see us at 4330 North High Street.
Baby, you smile, I smile. Oh, you smile, I smile. Hey, hey, hey.
Welcome back to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kavitko, and I'm here with Aaron Haslam. And Aaron, I know I gave you some pretty heady questions to ponder, but we only have about a minute left, so can you go ahead and tell me what legislation is coming and how successful do you think this has been?
Well, I think we've been very successful in attacking the problem. It's most of the results that we're going to hear or see for the time being is going to be anecdotal, because it's going to take a while for our education, our awareness, our prosecutions of the public, of the prescribers, educating all those folks. It's going to take a while for that to catch up. We were talking about a problem that's been deemed an epidemic by the Center for Disease Control across the United States. We're dealing with an epidemic, so it's going to take a while, but we're going to get there. We've had some success, but there's still a lot more to be done. As far as education that we're going to see in the future, or legislation that we're going to see in the future, it really is going to depend on how proactive the prescribing community is. I think
okay.
if they continue to be as proactive as what they've been in the last year, and start to educate and make aware of that gray area that we talked about earlier.
Right.
I think legislation, we're not going to see a lot of legislation around
done.
The issue.
Yeah.
As I oftentimes say, we don't want to legislate the practice of medicine or prescribing. That's what the experts are for.
Okay.
But at the same time, if that community doesn't continue to be proactive and we have the numbers of people continue to die from this issue,
then there'll be more legislation coming down the pike. Yeah.
I think we'll see legislation.
Hey, I'm really out of time. Maybe we can get you back on the show another time. So, what do you think?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, anytime. I would love to come back on the show. I enjoyed my time this morning.
Sounds great. Hey, I got to go. Our time is up. Next week, Scoony Pen. Tune in 8 o'clock and every Sunday morning at 8. Thank you so much.
Be sure and tune in next week for another exciting episode of Dentally Speaking with my dentist, Dr. Kvitko.
If you're interested in learning more about this and other dental health topics, go to dentallyspeaking.com to access full half-hour episodes of Dr. Kvitko's show.
If you would like to book Dr. Kvitko to speak at your next event, please call 614-262-9588. That's 614-262-9588. Or send an email to drkvitko@dentallyspeaking.com. That's drkvitko@dentallyspeaking.com.